Hello, thank you so much for joining us once again. Sister Denise has been sharing her wealth of spiritual experience with us, and she is taking us through shloka by shloka of chapter 18 so that the full message can be conveyed to you, the viewer. Sister Denise, it's always wonderful to have you with us. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I would like to start at verse 49. And I want you to give us your take on it. And there are two aspects that are of interest to me here, and I want to know what is it mean to you. It reads, with his intellect unattached at all times, with conquered self free from desire, by renunciation one attains the supreme state of freedom from action. Sister Denise, two aspects leap up from the page in this shloka. Intellect unattached at all times, and secondly, conquered self. Mm-hmm. That is a very, very powerful expression, because, it's not easy to achieve, is it? But tell us what it means to you.
With intellect unattached means that your motive is not to get something from it. So this verse 49 is talking about the intellect unattached, which is a point that has come up again and again and again, the whole question of non-attachment. And that means that the intellect, the attitude, the approach to existence is that I do the action which is right, regardless of the fruit. We had a whole section earlier in the Gita on the difference between renunciation and sannyas, and this is really referring back to that. This is speaking about a point that has been mentioned many, many times, which is that you have to have an intellect which is unattached. It's talking about non-attached action. So the state of freedom from action refers to our karma. This connects in with conquered self. Conquered self to me refers to self-mastery. It's not that you're subduing yourself, but that the soul knows exactly how to use the instruments of perception, the mind, the intellect, all the different aspects of consciousness, all the different ways in which you perform action through the body. And in that way, the action that you're doing, the karma that you're doing, is without bondage. So here we're looking at karma samband. You have karma bandhan, which is bondage of karma. And of course, it mentioned very clearly in an earlier section that it is not possible to have karma sannyas. You cannot not act. Mm. But what you want is freedom from the bondage of action, or you want to do akarma. So this is what I think this one is about.
Verse 50 reads, learn from me, capital M, briefly, Arjuna, how one who has attained perfection, who also attains Brahman, which is the highest state of knowledge. And verse 51 reads, endowed with a pure intellect, controlling the self with firmness, abandoning sound and other objects of senses, casting off attraction and hatred.
Well, attraction and hatred means, you know, attraction and repulsion.
Sister Denise, it goes on into verse 52 and 53 and 54. A whole lot of qualities that are mentioned that one has to become, and also that which one has to give up in order to obtain what is called oneness with Brahman, and also to attain supreme devotion to me. Could you take us through that entire bunch of shlokas?
So the idea of these five shlokas is that you want to return to nirvana and become once again part of God. So this really belongs to the Vedic tradition again, so that you are practicing to be alone, you're practicing, it says here, look, eating lightly, controlling speech, body, mind, devoted to yoga, meditation, take refuge in dispassion. That means you really want to leave life. You want to leave life. You want to go back to the soul world and not come back, you see. If you look at this, dwelling in solitude, you're alone. This is sannyas. This is what is sannyas. You're eating lightly, so no interest in food, controlling your speech, and if you're in solitude, you don't have anyone to talk to anyway. And controlling your body, controlling your mind, you're totally focused on meditation. That means you're trying to leave the body, leave life. And taking refuge in dispassion, you have no feelings about anything. 53, relinquishing egoism, force, arrogance, desire, anger, and possession of property. You want to be completely unselfish and return, you see, back to Brahman. So this is all about preparing yourself for death and return back to the world of light and disappear. And then you see 54, you're absorbed in Brahman, that means absorbed in the world of light, in a state of serenity, you're not mourning, you're not desiring, you're absolutely impartial, and this is how you go back to God. You're really leaving everything. So it's a very, very good preparation for the final moments before death. And then 55, by devotion to me, he comes to know who I am in truth. And you see, when a person is preparing themselves for death, they're also preparing themselves to go back to God and to cease to exist as an individual, you see. So there it says, he enters me immediately. So this is totally about preparing yourself to leave the body.
Is this not bordering on morbid? How does somebody who's in his 20s, who's married with children and has a very deep interest in God and loves God and loves the Bhagavad Gita, how does he practice this part?
Well, I think he's not going to be looking at this part when he's in his 20s, but when he's in his 80s, he will be.
Okay, so you apply aspects of the Bhagavad Gita to your life depending on your age?
Definitely. You know, in Hinduism, it is said that life is divided into five sections. So your first section is your childhood, then youth, then maturity, where you get married, you develop your career, etc. Then you have the stage of vanprast, where you go into retirement, and then the last stage is sannyas, where you just give up everything. And this seems to me to be exactly the kinds of shlokas that you would be really wanting to look at when you feel that any minute now I will die. And if you see those people that we both know who are in their 90s, they're always talking about, well, I'm going to die. I may not wake up tomorrow. Be prepared, you know, 90 is about what people think, that's extra time, you know. And so people of that age have to think about death quite a lot. Some people, they're okay with death, some people really not, you know. Even you may be very old, but you may not be ready to let go of your body. So I think that for a person who's really elderly and thinking about leaving the body, this is perfect, you see. And there are other parts of the Gita which are really good for when you're in the middle of your life, when you're young and you need some instruction how to prepare for life. So I think you have to be selective about the Gita, which bit really speaks to you at which time of life and what you're actually going through during your life. because life is full of changes. It's a journey with different terrains.
Sister Denise, I now want to take up verses 55 onwards. By devotion to me, he comes to know who I am in truth. Then having known me in truth, he enters me immediately, performing all actions. He whose reliance is always on me attains by my grace the eternal, imperishable abode. So,
Even it continues, 57, 58, it's all, I think, a continuation of this preparation for death. You want to be totally focused on God. You want to go to God. You want to know God. You want to perform actions, but with detachment. You're beyond the period of life where you're in business or creating family or anything. Here you are definitely leaving, and what you want is to go to God. You don't want to, go to limbo or go to some, get taken. You know, there is this idea that you get taken by the demons of death. Mm. But if you are preparing yourself for death, really, I want to know God, go to God, that's good, you know. And the last sanskar, I mean, there is this word antim sanskar, which refers to your funeral. But also you can say that the last thing you do is you leave your body. So a yogi really wants to leave the body in the most perfect way, with absolute detachment, and just go to God and not anywhere else.
Hmm. I see, Sister Denise, in verse 58, egoism rears its ugly head, and the verse reads, fixing your mind on me, you shall pass over all difficulties through my grace. But if through egoism you will not listen, then you shall perish. So it's very clear how your ego becomes an invisible obstacle between yourself and God. This is a warning as clear can be. But Sister Denise, the problem with egoism is you don't even realize you have a problem or that you are the problem. You see life as being the problem and you see other people having the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
So how do you interpret verse 58?
Well, you see, the word for egoism is ahankar, and ahankar is pride, false pride. So on the one hand you have God, on the other hand, you have death, and then you have your false pride, you see. So this is why death is such a big exam for people, because false pride, pride of the body, this incredible attachment to the body will just, you know, surge into your consciousness, and this will be what makes you perish, because then, if you're in your false pride at the moment of death, that's when it is said the demons of death take you, so that's you perish, because you're not creating the sanskar of leaving the body by your own volition. Because that's a very, very high kind of death, where you recognize, okay, that my moment has come, I have to be totally present for it, let go of everything, and just allow myself to go to the world of light, to go to God, and that's it, you know. And that requires a very stable, steady stage, a stage which is completely detached and very beautiful, very serene, and it's very fine-tuned, that stage, very fine-tuned.
I see that God is again addressing Arjuna as he did at the beginning of the chapter. I would now like to take up what is contained in verse 59, where God says to Arjuna, if filled with egoism, you think I shall not fight, your resolve will be in vain, your own material nature will compel you. Destiny versus choice. According to the Bhagavad Gita, destiny wins hands down. Because Arjuna is we meet this Pandav at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita with his head in his hands thinking, I'm not going to kill my family. Okay, I'm going home. And now God is saying to him, hello? No.
You can also read it a slightly different way. One is destiny wins hands down, but I don't read it as destiny winning. What I read it as is your body consciousness will win. Your material nature will compel you, you see. So
to if do what? To fight.
Yeah. You can't say, I shall not fight. Your body consciousness will operate independently of your morality. You see, because his thought, I shall not fight, is his morality. He says, I shall not fight because it is not moral to kill your relatives. And I wouldn't be able to enjoy the fruits of it anyway. And then God says to him, your material nature will compel you. So he's in this situation of war and, you know, he will have to defend himself. He won't be able to just do what his morality says. This body consciousness, this circumstance. I mean, in a way, I think that you're absolutely right to say destiny is going to do that. But I think there's also this side, which is your, I suppose, your instinct for survival, which will be operating here. And in the first line, it says that it is your ego that is connected with your morality. You see. So you have destiny connected with your nature, and then you have your ego connected with your morality. So there you have a very interesting situation of antagonism or the inner battle. So it's quite interesting to look at this shloka number 59 as talking about the inner battle going on in Arjuna.
This thought continues in verse 60. What you wish not to do through delusion, you shall do that. Against your will, Arjuna, bound by your own karma, born of your own material nature. Poor Arjuna thought he had a choice. Mm-hmm. Now he learns otherwise. His tears were for nothing. They were but a tantrum. And now he's faced with the reality.
You see, we're in verse 60 already, and it's leading us to the point where Arjuna agrees and accepts. So we still have in this verse, on the first line, delusion. You are deluded into thinking this. So his whole, the strength of his morality is not that strong because it's all part of delusion and his will isn't able to operate according to the force of delusion, which is too weak. And then on the other side, you've got bound by your own karma. Here you have again this destiny. You know, and karma that, you see, karma, the karma between himself and Dhritarashtra, himself and Duryodhana, means he has to kill them.
Yeah. Sister Denise, is karma a magnet?
Yes. Karma is a magnet, a magnetic force. You can't resist it unless you have a force greater than the force of karma, which is the force of the remembrance of God. And this is why a big part of the Gita is you must be focused on me, be focused on me, be with me, then only you will be free from karma. You see, so in Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga, it is said that there are three ways to finish your karma. One is through punishment, circumstances that are punishing. A second way is through yoga. And a third way is through this visions that take place after you have left your body. Here we're seeing that the only thing that's going to enable a person to go beyond that is yoga. And then when you're in yoga with God, he will say, okay, now you just kill. And your killing will bring the account to zero, you see. So then he has to obey rather than kill out of revenge or anger or anything. He has to kill because it brings the account to zero. And that is something that is really beyond the normal human way of being, very much. And so you see that the only one who can tell a human to operate like this is one who is a non-human. The Supreme Soul, the Supreme God, is a non-human, the Supreme Being.
Yeah. Okay, Sister Denise, that was a wow. Okay, and I think that we'll stop at this juncture because verse 61 takes up another thread, and I think it's best we take it up in the next episode. So I'm sure the viewers have learnt a lot from what you just shared, because it is not understood by many, that what you shared in this episode. Okay, it's not understood by many. And there you go. Sister Denise has shared some of the secrets of the law of karma, which may have hitherto been unknown to you. You're not alone if you find this extremely educational and enlightening. You're also not alone if you now see the Bhagavad Gita through an entirely new lens. You're not alone at all. And I hope that you do, because it's always great to learn something new and to see yourself and life and even God in a whole new, refreshing way. Newness is good. So I wish to thank Sister Denise for sharing what she has today. And I'd like to thank you for your ear for this half hour. And I do hope to see you for the next episode, where we will be looking at verse 61 onwards of chapter 18 of the Bhagavad Gita. Thank you so much for joining us, and goodbye.